Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello and welcome to the Home Assistant Podcast. My name's Phil. Joining me as usual, I've got Mr. Rohan. Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Good, thank you. As usual, this episode of the Home Assistant Podcast is sponsored by Home Assistant Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant and the ESP Home projects. Configuration is done via the user interface, so no fiddling with router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML. 2024.3, here we go. I'm excited for this release, Ron. I don't know about you.
Yeah, this is it's weird. It's not a big one, but it's a huge one at the same time.
I was looking over the features, and I'm like, I think this isn't like a huge release, but I think this is like, there's features in here that I didn't know I wanted, but now I do want, and I'm really excited for this release. It's just like one of those. For me, at least, you know, there's just some nice cleaning up things and like, oh, yeah, that's cool. I do want that. Let's get into it. So I'm going to start off with probably not the biggest thing, but one I'm really excited to see, and this is one like that really drew me to, like, oh, that's cool. User inputs for scripts are now available. And so you can actually go in to... So in a script, you can define things like variables. You can define things like, this script needs to target this entity. It can take, you know, this text input. Now you can have those variables exposed, and you click it from a dashboard, and it pops up in the more dialogue info. Those variables are now available to be selected. So now you can have things like, if you need to broadcast a message out to all your text-to-speech devices, you can now do that from that dialogue. So that's something that I found cool, and I thought was like a real highlight for me. Like, oh, yeah, like that opens up a whole world of possibilities. You know, maybe you could have a drop-down pick of music playlists to play everywhere. And stuff like that. But that was what I found. That was my...
It's pretty cool. There's like on a creator's call, to give it an example of like how to use that, right? And say, like, again, they use that the text-to-speech example where they had like a drop down and just said, hey, like,
yep,
I want to say, I want to announce something. You press it and it gives you like basically a text box to type what you want to type. Doesn't do responses yet. So you can't do like, it's not like the assist feature where it's like, hey, I want to do this. And then this is what it came back with or anything like that. It's just, it's a one way operation. It's just a script, right? So, but yeah. Now, I mean, we didn't talk about the biggest thing, I think, which was the announcement. As of this recording, it was the day before yesterday, which is a new session layout type, which is called Grace. That's a code name. It's not what it's actually called. But basically, in Home Assistant now, if you go in and you say, hey, I want to have a new...
A new view.
Yeah, is exactly. So if you hit your like edit UI and you press the plus button in an existing dashboard, you'll actually notice a part called sections. And it's also marked experimental. So again, so that means in Home Assistant's words, in Home Assistant terminology, that basically means it's a work in progress. It's beta. It's got, you know, like the last experimental thing we saw was the unified firmware for Zigbee and Thread.
Yeah.
Right. So to use the same radio as both modes kind of thing. And guess what? It didn't work great. But in this case, and that's a no fault of Home Assistant, right? There's some upstream requirements that weren't met and stuff like that. But in this case, this is marked experimental because it's a work in progress and it's something that they're going to be building things on. That also means that they might say, hey, you know what? We actually want to drastically change how this looks or feels or stuff like that. I've been playing with it quite a bit. I think I spoke about this in the last episode, but I recreated my Home Assistant instance on my Home Assistant Yellow, or I've started to. So I didn't blow my previous one away. I'm kind of currently running two instances. Will be migrating down to one once I move all my Zigbee devices over. But that's just been a progressive migration. So in there, I actually didn't have a UI set up properly. I just had the default. Here's everything just vomited on the page kind of setup, right? So. And Phil and I got a heads up that this is coming. So I said, you know what, I'm going to hold off. Let me play with this. So I tried using it as my main dashboard. A couple of the advantages there are it introduces some drag and drop functionality.
Yes.
The default layout is called Masonry. That is still there. That is still the default and it will be for probably forever. Right. Or at least for the, you know, foreseeable future. This is not meant to be a replacement for Lovelace, which is the current UI, which, you know, was the iteration on the original UI from that Home Assistant originally had. Phil, you and I have been both using Home Assistant long enough to have had, you know, I don't want to call it the pain of that original UI, but it was pretty painful.
The States UI it was called.
States UI, yeah.
You would have you'd have to put entities into groups and then define them as groups to have them laid out in a particular way. And then what we now call dashboards was released as Lovelace, which is why this new section layout is codenamed Grace.
They always name it after... really influential women in in society, right? But more, I guess more in like a computing context and that kind of piece. But so I've been playing with it and I decided, Paulus and Madalena and everybody from Abukasa on the Creators Call, they were like, it's not meant to be a replacement for Lovelace. So I decided to say, okay, I'm going to replace Lovelace with it. so that's actually my main UI right now. It works is you get drag and drop functionality. You basically have columns. It's a lot more predictable on where things are. So for example, you'll know that again, if I put my, let's just say I arrange things by like my room. So if I say, hey, my home office is in the column next to the kitchen. My home office will always be on the column next to the kitchen, right? So it's very predictable. And then even within there, you can kind of, they've started with the tile cards. You can kind of bring it in. and drag and drop and arrange both within that column, and you can move it in and out of that column. So there's a lot of cool things like that. And it actually even groups itself into smaller tiles. So it looks even and things like that, right? So that part is pretty neat. And when you start using those kind of features, it's like, wow, this is actually really easy to move things around and stuff. Now, for the most part, it's only tile cards that it supports. Again, it's experimental. It's beta. It's the first release. They just wanted to get this out there. See the feedback, see what needs to be changed. And then eventually they're going to be looking into a mechanism where they can kind of bring in a lot of the other types of cards. So you can still use those cards. It's not that they're gone. But for example, the way the cards lay themselves out kind of dynamically won't be the case with non-tiled cards at this point. So you still have all the functionality in there. So it's pretty cool. Like I said, I've been playing with it. It's been pretty neat. On the web, it looks okay, right? It looks decent. It looks really good. On the mobile, I find I actually really like the way it looks on mobile. It's just a nice, neat, logical organization of how things should be. And it's almost like how, you know, Google Home lays things out, or Apple HomeKit lays things, or Apple Home, I guess is what they call it, lays things out and so on and so forth. So like it's a nice kind of consistent view of how home automation tools build UIs to me.
I did try and play with it, and I was like, oh, where's the settings to like filter, you know, this is going to be displayed on mobile, this isn't going to be displayed on mobile. And I couldn't see that. I was like, oh, okay, maybe I don't have that control. But from what you're saying, it sounds like this new section layout is going to try and determine that for me anyway.
So if you look here, for those of you on YouTube, basically you've got a very logically laid out, UI, right? So up here I have a card that's not a tile card, right? So that's, I think it's, what is it? Is it the elements card? But, and then on the other side, I have tile cards around that, basically surrounding that. And so you can see it doesn't like nicely collapse and things like that, but it still works. It's still in the UI. It's still in there. That was an entities card. I apologize. Again, it works. It's really neat. It is definitely complementary to the UI, not a replacement. Maybe someday we'll get to the point where, you know, we have enough choice of cards and things like that where it can totally replace that. But for now, I'm pretty much just using it for states of devices and turning on and off lights, basically, is where that's going. And this is just a work in progress. What I showed you, again, I just did put a few things together last night, but it's pretty exciting. It's one of the bigger releases, so
yeah, I think a lot of work has gone into this.
A ton of work, right? So they're going to have so they already had a, let's call it a chapter one, right? Because we're not calling it a like year of the dashboard or something like that, or year of the UI or anything like that, but they're going to do these webinars where basically it's broken out into different, and Paul has kind of talked about this. If you haven't seen that episode, check that out. But Paul has talked about this last month, where basically he said, hey, like, this is what we're doing. We're going to have a bunch of different types of webinars, right? So last year was Year of the Voice. So kind of same kind of thing, but they don't want the theme. They don't want a single theme for the year. So that's still going to be there, though. But so you will see progress updates and stuff like that. And Home Assistant will deliver that via webinars on YouTube and Facebook and wherever they broadcast it. Probably Twitter and all those things, or X or whatever. I don't know. I love it. I wanted drag and drop for quite a while. It's one of those things where the Lovelace UI builder for me is, it's really good and it hits what I need to do, but it's also like, oh, if I put something in this section and I need to move it out, I'm like, oh my God, this is just such a pain. Like, I have to take this, grab it, move it out of there. And a lot of times that's like, okay, I'm just going to either copy it yep. and clone it into something else, or that means I need to take the YAML, extract the YAML out of there, like cut it, and then go open the new section. It needs to go in, find that new section, first of all, because sometimes it's like nested and nested and nested. And,
yes.
Or a nest and a nest and a nest. And it's like, it's intuitive, but it's not easy, right? Whereas drag and drop, we just click and drag it around, move it around wherever you need to go. That kind of thing. So yeah, I don't know. Those are my initial thoughts about this, at least.
I like it. I like the innovation. For me, it's like, I don't know. I'm really happy where my current dashboard is sitting. Like, I've just got it, you know, like with all the conditional cards and mushroom cards and all that. And for me, drag and drop isn't such a big deal because I'm comfortable with YAML. So, but I do understand, like, if we're trying to get into, you know, more of a, you know, more user-friendly audience, then, you know, these innovations are required. And this isn't, like, an easy thing to do, right? Like, this drag and drop and...
Yeah. Well, like I said, though, even if it is, it's not a replacement for Lovelace, right? So you still have some of those Lovelace elements, right? So it's not... It's meant to complement it, I think, at least at this point. Maybe down the future you'll be hearing something else, but today it's meant to complement it. I really like it for mobile because it just gives like a nice quick, hey, here's some buttons that you can press.
Yeah,
cool. That's really all I need. It doesn't support. So when you go into that sections layout, it doesn't support badges or things like that. I did get to see kind of a future state of where they want to go with it in the creator's call. And it looks pretty slick. I don't really know how to describe it outside of what's already been described. It's that, but better. I know that's absolutely useless from anybody's point of view listening. I apologize for that. But again, the preview I got was just a concept, right? It wasn't like nothing's built out in that or anything like that. It's just like, hey, this is what we think we want it to look like kind of thing. But that'll be iterated upon like another 100 times, right? So it's not.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking forward to see what, like,
until we're there.
I'm looking forward to seeing like the journey this goes on, right? Because I think as a first version, like this looks promising, very promising.
Totally. For a first cut at something, I think this is really, really good polished, right?
Yeah.
Is it perfect? Absolutely not. But it's pretty good for a first cut at something. So I think they want to get feedback for a lot of those pieces as well. Again, use the community forums, right? That's a great place to give, hey, you know, I love this, or I absolutely hated this one thing about it, right? And that way they can develop around what the community is saying. Not just, you know, one of the things that they're trying to do is not develop in a bubble either, right? So,
all right. Well, that's the biggest feature, I guess. But this release is packing a few punches as well. Mm-hmm. And another one that I really like is the new energy graph that's released. So in this version, so 2024.3, I'm still saying 2023. It's hard to break. In this release, 2024.3, a new graph has been added to the energy dashboard. So it can now break down your device's energy over time. So, and I actually I haven't used the energy dashboard in ages, and I saw this one. I'm like, oh, let's just go in and have a look at, you know, what's going on. This little graph is actually awesome. Like, I can now see. So, I had I think it defaults to yesterday or today, and I can see like every hour is, you know, like on the lower axis. And at 3 a.m. when I scheduled the dishwasher, like bam, I can just see like for that hour the dishwasher used most of the energy for that hour. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And now I can go back, you know, change it to a week, and I can see, all right, what used most of the energy on Tuesday, what used most of the energy on Wednesday. And it's really interesting to see, you know, one, how much my dishwasher actually consumes, but also there's some days where my dishwasher isn't the most, you know, expensive device that I run in the house, you know. It is definitely encouraging me to buy more energy monitors. Not that they're cheap, but I'd love to see, you know, how much the TV is running. All my downlights have Z-Wave smart switches on them. was there smart dimmers on them so I can actually get their energy usage. And they're actually like, it's interesting to see that, you know, some of the downlights, you know, that are on all day, you know, like don't use as much energy as, you know, like my Synology NAS that's running, you know, 24/7, which makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's a LED light versus a, you know, two drives or four drives or
I don't know how many drives you have in the NAS,
but like.
And even like things like my ASUS router that's also running 24/7, right? Like that. Yeah. It's just, once you boil it down, it's interesting to see. I also use a custom component from Hacks called PowerCalc, which has a whole. It's got a whole bunch of. It detects, you know, like Philips Hue bulbs that you might have connected, Sonos speakers that you've got connected. It detects all those on your premise instance and can then, thanks to other community members, can then calculate how much energy they are using without you needing an energy monitor on them. So I don't need to have a smart switch, you know, drawing, you know, calculating how much power my Sonos speaker is having because someone else has already done that. And yeah, it's actually interesting. They also calculate standby time as well. And yeah, I can actually see in my call graph, like, you know, in my new network energy graph is per day how much standby time I'm consuming. And I'm like, ooh.
That's neat.
Wow. And then that's maybe I do need to put a smart switch on some Sonos speakers or Philips Hue bulbs around the place, right? And
yeah, that phantom power.
Yeah, exactly. And this also goes into the home mission of, you know, trying to encourage people to be more green and use less energy and save money. So, yeah, absolutely love this. And it's really like, got me thinking about the energy dashboard again. So, yeah, great little addition.
Yeah, and honestly, it looks really nice too. So it's just, you know, it is pretty good looking UI-wise.
I would love to be able to have these graphs in like outside of the energy dashboard and put them in my Lovelace dashboard. I don't know if that's been, I think I tried to do it ages ago and it wasn't available, but yeah, hopefully maybe it's there now. But yeah, I'd love to be able to do that.
That would be cool. Yeah. There's some new sentences for Assist as well. So there's when you're now talking about intents and things like that for Assist, what you want it to do, you can ask it to adjust the position of a valve, for example, to 50% or just open it or close it or something like that. And cover support is also kind of getting that. So same kind of thing. So you have like blinds or you have a garage door or whatever, you can say, hey, open it to 53%. Cool. It'll do that. Vacuums can now be started or asked to return to the base. So we can say, hey, go back in the house or go back home kind of thing to the vacuum. It's funny that, sorry, just slightly tangentially, like it's, so we talked about this a while ago, probably about a year ago now. I got a D-Bot X1 Omni, and I know the X2 is out now, but I'm not spending more money on that. But it's got a built-in like smart assistant thing in there too, and it's like, but it's just a proliferation of things, and it's like it randomly hears its name when I'll be on like a work call or something like that, and all of a sudden it'll be like, it'll either just start going or it'll be like, I'm like, okay, I don't know how you heard that, like it's trigger word, but
can you turn that feature off?
I think so. So it's just, I haven't, I just, it's still there, but it's really like, I do find it handy because like sometimes it'll like, it's not perfect, right? Sometimes it'll ride up like a I have a chair, for example, whose legs are kind of like curved down, so it just looks like a slightly elevated surface, like a ramp kind of surface, right? So it sometimes has tried to jump on there and like get stuck, and I'd be like, okay, I'll put it back on the base, and I'll be like, okay, go back home now. And it'll just, you know, trot back home kind of thing. So it's like, for that, it's nice because I don't have to pull my phone out for that. So I've kind of been like, get it. But I think it's getting to the point where it's more annoying than it's not. But what's nice about this is if I set up the, and again, we've talked about this as well, I've been playing around with some of the voice pieces in Home Assistant as well. So if I set up, you know, a bunch of the M5 stack Atom Echoes or I want to get the ESP32 S3 box 3.
It's a mouthful.
little bit of a mouthful to say. But you know, even if I get those, something with a little better fidelity for mics and stuff, and stick those around the house, you know, it's, I think at that point I can just probably just replace, like just shut the smart off on this and just be like, hey, just go home. Like, it's,
yeah,
it's annoying me, but yeah, everything and, pretty much everything has its own like smart assistant now, where I don't necessarily know that I need 13 different smart assistants around the house.
No, no.
I mean, luckily they've narrowed it down to its own features. I can't be like, tell my vacuum to like take a note and like, you know, do this or add something to my grocery list, because that's not something I want to do with my vacuum cleaner.
Yep.
But, yeah. But I digress. Also, the last thing, one of the last things that they added here as well for Assist is media players can now play, pause, unpause, and fast forward. And it has volume support, so which is nice. So I can say, hey, turn up the volume on the Sonos speaker or on the TV or something like that. And I can do that.
I would love to see timers added in. And I'd love to see someone hacking the Amazon Echo wall clock via Bluetooth, so that when I do a timer in Home Assistant, the rings on the clock can also show the timer, because I love that feature.
Ooh, that'd be cool, yeah.
Then I could really get rid of that little lady.
Yeah, there's the Anju voice project as well, right, which is currently focused on Google Home Minis, where you replace the Google Home, the insides of the Google Home. You keep the speakers, you keep the LEDs, all that stuff in the shell, but you replace the PCB inside with your own PCB, and it's got an ESP32 in it and so on and so forth, and basically delivers that with the fidelity of the hardware that that Google is using, right? So it's a better speaker than what's on your, like, again, the Atom Echo, for what it is, it's great, but the speakers on here are just not good at all.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're a tin, somebody's talking into a tin can really quietly trying to talk back to you, right? It's pretty muffled at best. But yeah, so those are some cool things, some cool projects. I'm really enjoying seeing all of these like side projects that are spinning off from this. But yeah.
All right, stick around. We're going to be back with more features from 2024.3, and I'm going to give you another robot example for this.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What are some things you want to keep the same about yourself or your life in 2024? Maybe you want to add a bunch more automations in your home. Maybe you want to do some other stuff. What are you doing well already this year? Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we're already doing right. Maybe you finally got that one room automated. Maybe you got it organized and you want to tackle something else. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you want to actually eat breakfast too. Therapy helps you find your strengths so you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make those changes really stick. Therapy is really helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It really empowers you to be the best version of yourself, and it isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma or anything like that. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit betterhelp.com/assistant to get your 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/assistant.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so Rohan, just before I get into the next feature from 2024.3 that I didn't know I needed, but want. You just mentioned before robot vacuum cleaners. I was in two minds about whether to share this, but I don't know. Maybe you're going to be like, Phil, of course. I've known about this for ages, but your robot vacuum cleaner, the D-Bot, right? Is it a mop as well?
It does, yeah, it mops as well.
Yeah, so you've got the dirty, like the clean water, the dirty water tank, I'm guessing. Yep.
Yeah.
How do you, like, I've got the Roborock F7 Max V, so I've got the same thing, right? Yeah. Like, clean water bucket, dirty water. I don't know about you, but I was finding, like, the dirty water, like, emptying it out, like, I just get this rank sulfuric smell coming out of the thing.
Yeah.
Every time, same. Right? And same. I'm
every
like,
time.
Oh, it's disgusting. Like, I would take it, I'd clean it out. I tried different things, like I'd leave a little bit of water in there thinking like maybe that would, you know, stop whatever's growing in there from growing. No dice. I did a whole bunch of research there. Everyone was like, just buy the official Roborock disinfectant and put that in your clean water tank and it will go away. And that did not happen.
Like, I just straight up refused to do that. I'm not paying whatever they
want. Yeah, and Costco, that's,
a bottle of Bona or whatever and put a splash
and then,
in there.
I try putting a splash in the dirty thing, nothing, right? Like all I would get is bubbles and it would still smell disgusting. So I found some random person on Reddit. I tried to Google them and couldn't find where I found this tip was. But a dash of vinegar in the dirty water tank and a bit of water and then leave that in. Gone. Absolutely gone. Now, some people, I've just got Googled to try to find this person again and people's like, don't put vinegar in or whatever. I wouldn't put it in the clean water tank and let that run through the robot. Yeah. Don't put it in the clean water. Put it in the dirty water tank, like after you've emptied it. And then that will just prevent anything from growing in there, I'm guessing. And, you know, I don't have to do it every time.
Vinegar is also a natural deodorizer, right? So it's it helps with those kind of things too. So,
if you're having any issues like that, I was very impressed. Like just every time emptying out that thing.
You know what's funny? I use vinegar to deodorize things, right? Like my compost bin and things like that. Like even once you clean it, it's got like a gnarly smell. Like I'll bleach it and whatever, and then I'll spray some vinegar on there just to get rid of any other excess smells or anything like that. But I didn't think of doing that for this. It is rank. So those of you that own it probably know the smells we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It is really bad and. It's not ideal. And every time I pour it out, like I've tried pouring it into the toilet really quick, shutting the toilet lid and flushing. Nope.
That doesn't work.
I've just resorted to basically opening the tap in like one of my tubs and just like pouring it down. And like, I guess with the excess extra water, it like kind of like helps the water smell a little better. But I don't know. It's...
No, man, vinegar, I promise you. I was actually blown away like how effective it was. I was like, nah, this isn't gonna work, this is like someone trolling me on Reddit. But no, to their credit,
you just use like a little like capful or something and
not it
maybe
like
a little more just a splash.
It's just literally a, like from the kitchen, like from, you know, just open up the little serving vinegar, little dash in and a little bit of water just at the bottom to dilute a little bit to mix it around and gone within the like one or two runs. It was I literally see the black water going down the drain but no smell. That's great. So
very nice. All right,
that's my little tip.
That's gonna be my I'm gonna do that tonight. Like literally after we finish recording, I'm going to go in, dump the dirty water out and put a splash in. That's you've inspired me. That's awesome.
Good All right, 2024.3 is what we're here to talk about. So the template translation helper is now available. So if you use templates in things like notifications, announcements, or maybe even messages on your dashboard, there is a new helper which will translate things like binary sensor on-off values, for example, open and closed, detected, clear, or even things like covers. I think they might have a status that needs to be translated. The sun, you know, below horizon, above horizon can now, you know, actually make sense. The template, I really love this because I used to use my Jarvis announcement script in the morning and I'd have to constantly, you know, if binary sensor, you know, garage door equals on, then put, by the way, the garage door is open, or something like that. Now you can just put in the state, or you can just attribute this binary sensor as part of the flow of your, as part of the text, and it will translate, you know, that on or off to open, closed, detected, not detected. Yeah, it's just one of those nice things that I'm like, yeah, okay, why hasn't that been there for a while? So yeah, thank you for contributing that.
Yeah, I think I want to say it's also for different languages too, but I might be wrong.
Yes, you know, you're right. So it is, because it's using the Home Assistant language underneath, it's already translated. So, you know, if open, close, yeah, that will come in, like if you're in the French, Spanish, or wherever language, it will actually show you, it won't, it's not going to be the English translation of it. It's going to be your local translation, right, of that terminology, which is also fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. So especially for those of you that are obviously non-native English speakers and things like that, it makes things just a little bit easier there too,
right? Yeah.
Rather than having to say, okay, this equals this somewhere else, and then pull that in and do, yep, check for that and like do all of that stuff. It's just brought it to that, which is really nice. The Home Assistant Remote UI can be disabled. So if you're using Home Assistant Cloud, I mean, as we talked about in the beginning of every episode, you can access your Home Assistant remotely.
For a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant and the HP Home projects.
That's right. But yeah, so you can access it remotely using the remote UI feature that it has. If for whatever reason you have that feature disabled, you can actually go enable it remotely through the Nabucasa account, where it'll go back and talk to your instance and pop it on. The community kind of came back and said, hey, if I don't have it turned on, I probably don't want it turned on. Sometimes people just didn't know you could do it, things like that. So it's for convenience. So you still have the option to turn it on from Nabucasa, but now you have the option in Home Assistant to disable the ability for Nabucasa to turn that feature on, right? So it's a little more security conscious. If you don't want it turned on, I would encourage you to go in and set that setting. To say, hey, just disable the remote enabling of the remote UI feature, right? So, i.e., when you go into nabucasa.com, you can't remotely enable the remote enabling of your of your instance, right?
Who likes the movie Inception right now?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, so that's basically what it is. So, for those of you that are security conscious, something I would encourage you to turn on if you're not using the remote UI functionality there.
And I really appreciate them taking on that feedback and saying, you know what? Yeah, let's just make that optional. Yeah, I like it. All right. If you own a Tesla and you're using the Tesi integration, this one's for you. They've got some more goodies in this release, including a new charging sensor, so you can see the status of your car. Is it charging, not charging? And there's also a lock added into Home Assistant. So using the lock domain of Home Assistant, you can now set the speed limiter on Tesla, so you can restrict how fast your car can drive. And there's also some new range sensors as well, so you can see how far your vehicle has left. So do you need to charge it today or tomorrow? They're available as of this release.
Nice. There's now a toggle service for climate devices. So just like how you have like for lights and switches and stuff like that, which you can call a toggle service, you can now do the same thing on the climate domain. So for example, if your AC is in cool mode, if you call climate.toggle, it'll turn that climate device off, right? So again, just it'll do the opposite of what it's currently doing, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then if you hit toggle again, it'll turn it back on. Cool. That kind of thing.
All right. Some new integrations landing in 2024.3. We've got Aprilaire. Assume it's French. Yes, I think it's French or something. It was previously a custom Hacks into component. It's still available on Hacks. It's now officially in Home Assistant. So thank you to the developer for bringing that into the core Home Assistant, not just leaving it out there in Hacks. This allows you to control the compatible Aprilaire thermostats. So do check the documentation in homeassistant.io. Just make sure you've got a supported thermostat.
We've seen a couple of those happen, eh? Where they've taken the hacks component and actually migrated to an official component, which is great because now it's part of the core. It's always going to be there. Well, not always, but always enough, right? Like, and it's more than just typically you or the couple of developers that are supporting it. It's you now have community behind it too, right?
Which
hacks does. It's just a bigger community.
And it's not masked behind this is a custom thing. You know, you could install things that could break your home. This is an instance they're not supported by.
It's more accessible, right? So for sometimes people don't want to use hacks components because they're like, well, you know, this is written by some random developer somewhere, blah, 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 that kind of thing. I don't have that mentality. If it's on hacks, I'm like, cool, fine. Like, I'll use it. Yeah. But I get it. Husqvarna is automower. So you can control their robot lawnmower now from Home Assistant. Those are pretty cool. I've looked at those and I've realized that those are not cheap. So if you have these, they are pretty cool. I'd love to give a review on it, but I have no idea because I can't afford one. But they are really neat.
And cloud dependent. So
yes, and cloud dependent.
Microbees, also cloud dependent, I believe. You can now control microbee devices such as wall switches and plugs from Assistant.
Webmin. So if you're a Unix Linux administrator, you're probably familiar with this. So it's a web-based interface for systems administration of it, of Unix type servers or Linux type servers. Basically, if you use that, it'll expose sensors for CPU and memory usage of your servers.
I might start adding that around my place. Like, yeah, be cool to get like a home assistant to monitor, you know, oh, your satellite server over here is, you know, using X amount of CPU and ZWebJS is going to crash if you don't fix that sort of thing, right? So that's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Weatherflow Forecast, the cloud version, is now available. So previously there was a Weatherflow integration in Home Assistant that used a local integration. This one uses an API key and the cloud account. If you have your data pushing up into their cloud servers, you now can get an API key and you can request access to the weather cloud information.
Neat. Let's talk about some breaking changes. So Z-Wave. So in Z-Wave climate, for Z-Wave climate entities, the behavior of the climate turn-on service changed. So in the past, basically what would happen is it'll happen in a specific order depending on what conditions were met. So if the entity was off if the entity supported off being off and one more mode, turn on would set the mode to the additional mode. If that condition wasn't met and there's at least one other following mode available, basically the service would set the mode to say, hey, you know what? This is what I first found and that's what I'm going to do. So that'll be heat, cool, and then heat, and then cool. And then if neither one of those were met, then basically it would do nothing. But it wouldn't really say anything about that. So you would think you did it, but it didn't. So now what happened is it changed a little bit. So now it's, if it supports the resume thermostat mode, it'll be used to restore the last mode that you did. That's actually super handy. So again, slight tangent, and I apologize, this is a complicated thing and I'm just going off on a tangent, but, for my Ecobee, I actually had to build in this whole thing and like in Node-RED where I pulled in its current state. So I had an automation where basically if I open the door, if my front door or back door have been open for more than, I think it's a minute, then it'll turn off the Ecobee just to not waste heat and cooling, whatever it's running. Once it's closed, then it'll turn back on and restore the previous state. However, maybe this has changed, but at the time there was no previous state sensor or anything like that. So I basically had to create my own and like record it and then go in, check again. And then like, it was a whole ordeal. So there's one side, so I presume.
This breaking change isn't related to the new feature of the climate the climate toggle service. Yeah. So I assume now that toggle service should have support for your Ecobee device. So you should be able to remove that Node-RED stuff.
Yeah, hopefully. Like if you look at the flow, it's literally like It's like, it's massive, and it goes through these different checks, different iterations.
Yep.
Was it the front door? Was it the back door? Which that will stay anyways. But basically, both doors act the same because it's the same behavior. Right? Turn off the ecobee and restore. Just saying it is really easy. Building that out in Node-RED, I was sitting there and like, what am I trying to do here? And you look at it and it's the most complex thing. But hopefully this, I want to see, maybe I'll try it and see what happens, but, it's weird. My ecobee stopped like working properly. It's like, it just dies off of the, like it just falls off wireless randomly. And even its sensors just randomly fall off. So I think one of the radios is getting, shot. But ecobee refuses to do anything about it. So thanks, guys.
Nice.
It's not even a cloud versus local control. It's just no radio, right? Yeah. I have it brought in as HomeKit, but, you know. Anyway, so if the entity supports resume, it'll be used to restore that last mode. And if that didn't happen and Home Assistant wasn't restarted, basically Home Assistant will remove that remember that last on mode. And it'll set it to that mode. And then Home Assistant will be, it won't set it if Home Assistant started it in an off position, right? An off mode. Since it won't know what the previous mode was, which is fair.
Yeah.
Because if it doesn't know, it's not just going to assume and be like, you wanted heat in the summer, right? So, or cool in the winter, right? So it probably wouldn't, you don't want it to do that. If neither of those conditions are met, then basically, it'll set it to the first mode it finds. So heat, cool, heat, and cool in that order, right? So that's what it was before, but now you have the ability for the resume, and then if it's already in off, it won't do anything. If none of those conditions are met, then basically it'll support the first one it finds. So like dry or fan only or whatever. So a little bit complicated. We'll leave it in the notes. Read through it, read it a couple of times. I know I had to, so it's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the turn on service has always been a little bit tricky for me. I've always found when using like a mushroom card or an entity card on the dashboard, mm-hmm. if you would just click an entity, using the turn on service, it would always go to heat cool for me on an air conditioner, not the cool mode. I think that's like, if you've experienced that behavior, this is what this is trying to address. So now I'm hoping that when I hit the resume button or hit that toggle button, it's not going to go to heat cool anymore. It's going to go back to cool. So yeah, I'm excited for that. All right. MetNo is an integration in Home Assistant that used to provide two entities for each configured location, one entity which provided the daily weather forecast and another entity which provided the hourly forecasts. The integration now will only create a single entity which provides both of the daily and the hourly weather forecasts.
Neat. JuiceNet, which is a really weird word to say. The JuiceNet platform was, so you used to pull data from a JuiceNet charging station equipped with a Wi-Fi connection. So it also threw up a switch in Home Assistant to basically say, hey, I want to charge it now rather than whatever preset schedule. NLX migrated that from going from JuiceNet to JuicePass, which then rendered the JuiceNet integration useless. I don't know how many more times I'm going to say JuiceNet in this sentence. basically, they transitioned the platform just to give a better user experience, right?
Allegedly.
We'll see in a month when they get like Home Assistant canceled. No, I'm kidding. Hopefully they actually are providing better service and stuff, but it looks like they're moving from a local to cloud, which I don't love, but who knows? Again, I have no idea what this platform actually is. It sounds like it's an EV charger of some kind.
Yeah, I think it's like an EV charger that people have purchased, and now this company said, we're moving to this new app and it's breaking all your, like the existing API calls, they don't exist anymore. And so now like everyone's like, well, I'm just going to sell this charger, right? Like I can't control, you know, how much wattage or amperage I'm sending to my car when I want to do it and all that. But what I was really pleased is if you read the issue that Home Assistant links in the breaking changes, there's like a whole bunch of comments. There's like 50 odd comments in there. But Snicket was able to go in and created a Docker container and reverse engineered the new API.
Amazing.
So you can run this Docker container. It will act as a man in the middle and proxy requests. So you can still use the new Juice Pass app. So yeah, that's not going to be affected. And this Docker container will allow Home Assistant to then pretend to be that Juice Pass app and expose entities via MQTT to Home Assistant. It's not an official integration. There's no update to the integration. It does require you to run this Docker container or another solution that might be hidden away in that GitHub thread. I thought that was a really neat solution. So if you've got the expertise to run a Docker container, yeah, hats off to Snicket there for contributing that to the community and giving people another option.
Yeah. Yeah. At least, as long as they don't turn around and pull what Heyer did, that would be.
Yes. Yeah. That was terrible.
Just dumb. All right. That was a lot. Yeah. Like it's, like we said, it's small. There's not a ton of stuff, but there's a ton of stuff, right? Like it's, I know the Home Assistant team, they mentioned that they wanted to, there's a bunch more stuff. And it was like really big, really crazy stuff that they wanted to add in here as well that didn't make it. So hopefully we'll see those in the next release.
Yep.
And also there is a State of the Open Home.
Yes, there is.
Episode. I don't know what you want to call it. State of the Open Home. Webcast coming, and that will be
so Paulus. Yeah, he announced it on our last episode with him. I believe it was April 20th.
Yes, that sounds right. I'm just pulling up my calendar because I put it in there. Yes, April 20th. I don't have the time yet, but probably around like 11 Eastern, I assume, is typically, or 1 Eastern, like it's usually in that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing what that's what's happening there, and again, that's meant to be more of like a not just Home Assistant, but a lot of the ecosystem there too, right? Even things like you know, obviously ESP Home and Zwave.js and all of those
kinds of roadmap projects.
And a roadmap, hopefully, yeah. So, yeah. We'll hopefully get to see what's going on in that, and yeah, we'll. I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. I'm pretty stoked for that. So check it out.
There we go.
Yeah, it'll be April 20th. Just follow Home Assistant on their channels. Follow us and we'll post that as well when we get the chance.
I think that's it for this month. Catch you in the next one.
Sounds good. Cheers.
Cheers.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on hasspodcast.io.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.